Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Ian McGuinness, Deirdre Malumbi and Russell Alford with us once again to talk about all things movies and booze and showbiz and stuff. Is this alcohol-free beer you've brought in?
We have alcohol-free beer. We have Japanese alcohol-free beer and also the world's first Trappist dark Belgian malted beverage, alcohol-free beer.
Crikey. That's a mouthful there.
It's a whole new style with one beer in it.
I don't understand.
Not normally when you have a style, it's because you want to explain to somebody what it is and you collect a whole pile of things and you put them into it.
Yeah.
But for this one, there is only one to put into the category, so it's a style of one.
Okay.
It's incredibly interesting.
But it's more defined by what's not in it rather than what's in it, alcohol.
We're going to be looking at the story of Goldilocks and the alcohol-free beers today.
Okay. Oh, yeah, a classic. One for the kids. I'm glad I made a cup of tea. Let's put it that way. So, Superman.
Superman, yeah. That's kind of a fair way to describe it.
Oh, God.
Although in some places it's been getting really good reviews. So, I don't know. It's kind of a weird... There's been a weird reception to it so far. I'll deep dive into all of its flaws.
But is it essentially the same story? Or, you know, more or less?
I mean, it's kind of weird because it almost like you're kind of watching the movie and it almost feels like you're kind of plonked right into the middle of it. Like it feels like there should have been like a build up or maybe a movie like before it. Like synopsis wise, so the way IMDb describes it is the film follows Clark Kent / Superman's journey to reconcile his Kryptonian heritage with his adoptive human family in Smallville, Kansas. Although we don't see either like all that much. But basically the start of the movie kind of catches us up with some of those, you know, titles that kind of blare across the screen or whatever. We learned that Superman has lost his very first fight and now he faces off a band of metahumans who've been designed by Lex Luthor. Rather.
Okay. All right. So we saw that one before, did we not? Or that was, there was three that kind of got out of prison or something and they beat the crap out of Superman in that one.
Yeah. That sounds like
the thing is, but like it's just basically telling the same story over and over again, and maybe people want to hear the same story over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, the superhero like genre as like a kind of, you know, body of work at the moment, it is struggling. You know, both the kind of DC output and the Marvel output, there haven't been any kind of really big like box office smashes since, and they're all kind of flailing a bit. And yeah, I would probably add this to them in that it's not great. I mean, Thunderbolts was probably the last movie I was like, oh yeah, that was a bit of fun. But even that, I wouldn't say was extraordinary.
No, not at all.
And it didn't do great either at the box office. So
it's a cliche apparently of in writing classes that they say if you want to make a character sympathetic, give them a dog. So does that work in Superman?
I mean, I thought the dog was a bit silly, you know, but the kids are like the dog, Sean. Yeah. You know, they always...
But the dog already had a movie. There was the Super Pets, the League of Super Pets.
Oh, yeah, there was
Super
that
Dog
one.
Was in that. Animated. That was a great movie. I bet you it's better than this rubbish. Yeah. So, Hot Milk...
Hot Milk, that's another movie that's out at the moment. So that's more of the kind of indie drama sort of ilk. A very actually hot looking movie. So it's definitely in theme in terms of like what's
hot
going on.
Hot as in attractive or as in weather?
Oh, no, it's like hot. Well,
yeah, okay.
Weather-wise.
Right,
yeah, but you've got like three fantastic lead female performances in there from Emma Mackey, Vicky Creeps and our own Fiona Shaw. So looking forward to chatting about that one too.
All right. Okay. So Brad Pitt tried a method acting, Russell.
Yes, and a very...
Just the once.
This is the most memorable at least. So Brad Pitt obviously promoting the F1 movie at the Mo. He appeared on the New Heights podcast, which is hosted by Travis Kelce off of NFL and Taylor Swift fame, and his brother Jason, and he was talking about one of his early examples of method acting, and I don't know if you've known this, there's videos of just Brad Pitt eating online, like very long videos of him just eating.
What's he eating?
Various things. It's like compilations of various movies that he's done over the years. People have a fascination with
eating.
Oh,
I see, so they don't go, here's a pizza, Brad, get stuck into
No, it's not like Bon Appetit or anything like that. So he has a bit of a reputation for this, and early on in his career, he was trying out method acting. A scene required him to eat a plate of beans, and he did that take after take after take to the extent that nature took its course and the entire cast and crew had to leave this very small cafe that they were filming in, much to his embarrassment. He obviously still does various forms of method acting.
Does he, though? I'm surprised by that. I would have thought he was too lazy to be a method actor.
The eating method, I guess, maybe he's abandoned to one side after this particular incident. Yeah. But not the best experience for a young actor to experience. Yeah. Nor the crew. Let's give them a bit of a moment.
But if you say he still is a method actor, is he for the F1 movie, did he go around in, you know, driving cars for 6 months and pretending to be a... Does he do that?
Does he just go vroom vroom when he's in a car constantly?
I mean, I've heard he did some of his own stunts in that movie. Mm. Yeah. And you can tell in certain shots that it is legitimately him.
But that's not method acting. That's just showing off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you get the chance to like drive fast cars for a job, you're going to be like, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But that's not method acting.
No, it's just
acting. No, it's by what I mean, like Brad Pitt is, and you know, Brad Pitt's great. But like he's Brad Pitt. So, I mean, you're never going to see a movie and go, God, that's so un-Brad Pitty, that movie, if you know what I mean. So why would he bother method acting?
Is that why there's a 15-minute compilation of him just eating from various movies online?
I always get the impression he's kind of lazy, you know, because he just go, I'll eat. Whereas, say, Tom Cruise runs everywhere. That's tiring. Yeah. Eating isn't, you know, eating just... You know, the worst thing can happen to somebody, you know, smells your farts.
It's difficult, trust me.
I've heard that Brad Pitt really loved the catering on Fight Club, says the texter. And then when he heard the same caterers were working on Ocean's 11, he made it a character trait that his character is always eating. I believe he eats in every scene of that film. That is true, actually. That's a good point. He always has something in his hand. Super Pets can't have been great, surely. I know we dislike the current trend, but surely this movie will be better than that. Well, I don't know. Kids like Super Pets. Superman reached its peak back in 1980 with Superman 2 and Kneel Before Zod. Does Zod show up in this one? Or was that
there's
a spoiler?
No Zod in this one.
Yeah, okay, no Zod.
Sorry if that was a spoiler.
Okay, that was a bit of a spoiler. Yeah. And now Tattoo.
Everyone else is in it.
I suppose people remember they represented Russia in the Eurovision once.
They did, they came third.
Yeah. Now, are they sorry for something that they didn't do, or did they do anything?
It's a case.
I don't understand what's true in this story.
Fascinating one. So this is a sorry, not sorry type of situation. So if you remember Tattoo, yes, they represented Russia at Eurovision. They were famous for a song in particular called All the Things She Said, which was scandalous at the time because it was lesbians kissing in the rain.
That's people, what they do, I believe.
I know, it's wild.
Especially every time there's rain, there's lesbians all over the street.
I know, just can't stop
tonguing
it.
Each other madly. Yeah.
It's crazy. They set that up. So back this is the early 2000s type of time, and they have had a bit of a resurgence in the last couple of years since about 2015-16, and they've been promoting that they're doing some gigs in Crimea, which of course is occupied at the moment. And they put out a statement saying that they're bringing new music out together. And then another Twitter X account tweeted this long apology from one of the singers. She, in the past, had said that she wouldn't support if her son was gay and said very derogatory things. This post then essentially apologized for everything she has said over the years, that she wanted to be an ally of the community and denounced Putin. And then very quickly, the official Tattoo account came along and said, she never said that. That was not true.
Okay.
So what's clearly happened here, and this happens often when there is international language artists, that there's often maybe a fan page that gets misconstrued as a popular account, for example, or as an official account translating things. And a lot of accounts, I got convinced by it myself. Out Magazine, which is a big LGBTQ publication, also got caught out by this. They were all very upset that this statement ended up being untrue, because I guess there was kind of, you know, there's a good backbone of it, we're sorry for what we said.
But did she originally say she wouldn't support her if she had a son who was gay? Okay.
So she's still in that camp.
She's still in that camp. And though their song was about lesbians,
but everyone
kissing
assumed,
and lashing rain.
Yeah, everyone assumed at the time it was all very much publicity. So I remember that contest in particular. It was my first big Eurovision. I was a huge fan of it. And I remember the scandal. It was like, what if they kiss on stage at the Eurovision of all things? The greatest event in the world.
It's hilarious. You'd be surprised if it didn't happen at the Eurovision now, to be honest with you.
So it's they're not sorry.
They're not sorry. Oh, God, so they've totally kind of...
double down in a lot of ways.
And their Putin-y kind of support.
And of course, going to Crimea to perform, which, you know, is a no-no.
So. Ooh. Okay, tell us about our first beer, Dean.
Right, first beer. So it's Kirin Ichiban, and it's Kirin Ichiban 00. So first of all, when it comes to alcohol-free beers, there are different definitions of alcohol-free beers depending on what country you're in. So for the EU and the US, it is less than 0.5% alcohol is considered alcohol-free. In the UK, alcohol-free is considered alcohol-free at less than 0.05%. percent ABV.
Crikey. Yeah.
Which brings it down to kind of in and around the area that fruit juice would be at, because fruit juice would have sugar and you can have a tiny amount of fermentation in fruit juice that would cause a tiny amount of alcohol to form in it. This beer qualifies as alcohol-free under the UK definition. So it's a 00 beer and it is considered to have no alcohol in it whatsoever. Now, you're right in terms of the style, insofar as the style by definition is defined by the fact that there is something not in it.
Yes.
So then when you start describing it, you describe all of the things that could be in it and then say they're not there. You know, that alcohol can have a kind of warming flavour and it can be slightly sweet flavour with stronger beers. Sometimes you can get unusual flavours from alcohol, like a banana with higher alcohols. And with this, you don't have that. And alcohol also contributes to flavour. Alcohol is a slightly lower boiling point, and when it comes in contact with your skin, it evaporates and carries volatiles with it, which goes through the back of your throat up to your nose and allows you to taste a little bit more of the beer. Mm. So that's all the things that you don't have in the beer.
Yeah.
But in terms of Goldilocks and the three and the alcohol-free beers, when you're talking about things in the Goldilocks story, what you have is porridge that is either very sweet or not sweet at all, and then there's Baby Bear's porridge that's just in the middle, and it's perfect. And Goldilocks likes Baby Bear's porridge. Now, when it comes to alcohol-free beer, by definition, you are on either Daddy Bear's side or Mommy Bear's side, because if you go down to 00, you can't go beyond 00 unless you use antimatter.
Yes. Okay.
So basically, people who object to alcohol free beers are saying that Mommy Bear isn't allowed to eat sweet porridge, which isn't fair. Mm-hmm. Unless you're the Irish government, where they will probably put a little label on Mommy Bear's porridge saying this could cause type 2 diabetes. And they don't respect that Mommy Bear would realise that if she has small portion sizes and exercises regularly, that she would be perfectly safe.
Okay. Finding out a lot about Mommy Bear. Yeah.
In any event, there is a need to balance.
Do you have a metaphor consultant that helps you with these things?
There is a need for balance in beer.
Okay.
But that balance can swing in different directions. And when it comes to alcohol-free beer, from the alcohol perspective, it has swung to the other end of the scale and it is in the alcohol-free camp. So by definition, it isn't somewhere in between. It's down at the other end of the scale.
Oh, no, absolutely. But there's probably a lot of beers that would be alcohol-free in other jurisdictions, but not in the UK, because they might come in at 0.5.
Yes, and they would be called de-alcoholized beer, because that's a romantic term. It sounds absolutely terrible. Like if they're trying to promote the idea of drinking very low alcohol beers as being a healthy thing to do, then using the term de-alcoholized, you really have to wonder who did that. Now with this one, with both of the beers that we've got today, what I looked at is if you've taken away the alcohol flavor and if there's a little bit less flavor because of that, how else can you have more flavor in the beer? So with Kirin Ichiban, they brew according to what's called the Ichiban Shibori process. And in very simple terms, at the start of the brewing process, you've got effectively what is like a huge tea bag. So you've got a whole pile of crushed malt mixed with water, and the water leaches out flavour out of the malt, just like water takes flavour out of a tea bag. What Kirin do with Kirin Ichiban is they take the first runnings, so the kind of stuff that has the best of what's coming out as compared to somebody who uses a tea bag for six times and gets a cup of tea out of it because they've used it again and again. With Kirin Ichiban, they're using the first pressing, so they get a bit more flavour out of it. Also, it's an all malt beer, so you're getting more malt flavour as compared to some other beers, particularly with Asian beers, where they use adjuncts like rice. And rice, again, can give lovely flavours in beer, but the flavour of rice is incredibly soft, incredibly light. So if you've got the flavours that aren't related to alcohol very, very low, then it's going to be a particularly light drinking beer. With this one, you've got some biscuit flavors. There's some hop character. They can't build up the hop character because, again, they have to keep that balance. But what you do have is a little bit of white pepper, a little bit of heat from chili. The malt flavors are kind of malt cracker and biscuit flavors. Nicely balanced beer. It has a bit more flavor than your average kind of alcohol-free beer. And if this is something that you're interested in, there's an event in a week's time in Daruma in Malahide, a high Japanese restaurant. The master brewer for Kirin is coming over to Ireland and we'll be talking about Kirin in Daruma. There's three sessions on Saturday, the 18th of July, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 3.30 and 7 o'clock. And he'll be coming along talking about the Ishiben Shibori process and having some Japanese beers and some Kirin.
It sounds from your description, correct me if I'm wrong, that unlike your de-alcoholized beer was like we made beer and then we boiled the crap out of it kind of thing, that they came up with a completely different process to make beer.
What you've got is the old, and again, people of a certain vintage, and I would be in that vintage, when you mention alcohol-free beers, you think of things like Caliber.
And Caliber and blessing yourself going past the church. You're bringing it all back on this show today.
You start looking for the types of things that you use in vampire movies, you know, to try to ward off evil. What they did with that was they just boiled the crap out of the beer to try to get the alcohol out.
Yeah.
And the result of that was that they boiled a whole pile of off flavors into the beer. With the modern alcohol-free beers now, what they're able to do is they're able to do very special filtration methods to get the alcohol out. And they can be incredibly effective with it, obviously, if they bring it down to effectively 0.0.
Yeah.
They can also do things in the brewing process to reduce the amount of alcohol that is formed so that there's less alcohol to pull out as well. Mm. But like in effect, even at the less than 0.5% ABV level, 0.5 ABV is 1.3 grams of alcohol. And as we all know, 10 to 12 grams of alcohol is one unit of alcohol, except that you probably don't know that because you're probably normal people. And we process about a unit of alcohol in an hour. So the amount of alcohol that you have, if it's less than 0.5, gets processed by your liver in about 8 minutes, which is pretty much faster than you can get it into your liver.
Yeah.
So it can't get really through your liver to get into your blood alcohol stream unless you have a certain medical condition where you have difficulty in metabolizing alcohol.
Okay, I feel that there's a greater point you're trying to make there, Dean.
Well, the point is that less than 0.5, it's effectively alcohol-free anyway.
I think we all know what you're saying. Sean, because you're over 55, you've heard the Superman story ad infinitum. That's not the case with the younger people. The story would appear newer to them. If this text sounded condescending, you'd be correct. Well, luckily for you, I'm an old white guy, so it's virtually impossible to condescend me, but you've condescended to pretty much all young people. Russell, are you familiar with the Superman story, or do you mix it up with Jesus?
I constantly am confusing Jesus and Superman. Yeah, I went to a church one time and I was like, wow, that's Superman?
Where's the cape?
Yeah.
Right. What movie would you like to talk about first?
Well, we start with Superman.
Okay, we'll be talking about Jesus after this break.
Sir?
What is this? Crypto! What the hey, dude?
I thought
you destroyed the whole Superman robots. I thought I told you to keep an eye on him.
We feed the canine, but he is unruly. And he realizes we are not flesh and blood and couldn't, in our heart of hearts, care less whether he lives or dies.
Stop, Crypto, leave it. Ow, ow, stop, ow, stop it. Crypto, ow, ow, stop it, stop, sit, stay.
Okay, so Crypto is English. Is that what I'm getting
No, Crypto is the dog. That was one of the robots speaking.
Okay, sorry. So it was an English robot. Yeah,
yes.
Okay. All right, sorry. I'm confusing people already. So a controversial suggestion. People already know the story, so the filmmakers didn't feel the need to kind of explain where he came from or Krypton or any of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It does just kind of, like I say, drop you into the story. Some opening titles kind of like catch us up so far. We see that Superman keeps replaying this video, which is from his parents, including his father, Jor-El, who in this movie actually is played by Bradley Cooper. So there you go. He's been played by some renowned actors.
I thought Bradley Cooper had transferred over to the old guy casting at this point.
Yeah, there you go.
Crikey. Okay. Right, so yes, and what's Dad saying to him?
So we don't know what the message is because it's in whatchamacallit,
Kryptonese.
Kryptonese, exactly. But if it's characters you're looking for, this film is absolutely full of them, because I know you were asking just before the break if Zod was in it. But if you're missing him, you've got Lois Lane in here, Mr. Terrific, Green Lantern, Hawk Girl, Eve the Engineer, Jonathan and Martha Kent, Jimmy Olsen, Perry White. Like I said, the parents pop up as well. Yeah, there's so many characters in this, and so many things happen. It's just so full of stuff, you know, and you're finding it very kind of hard to keep up with everything. And it's just too much, if I'm honest. Another thing that kind of bugged me about this movie is that tonally it was just kind of a bit all over the place. Now, if anyone has seen kind of obviously, you know, the OG of Superman movies, which is like when Christopher Reeve played the role, obviously there were kind of some silly and campier like chapters in there and everything. And in this film, you get the kind of silly kiddie-ish stuff. You would have heard a lot of it in that clip there. Like, you've got kind of goofy robots, you've got your super dog in there, monkey troll bots at one point. And then elsewhere in the film, you have these kind of conversations about politics, about social media and public image. So you assume, okay, well, that stuff, I suppose, is for like the more mature members of the audience. But it's just very kind of strange because it goes from very light and fluffy and ridiculous and campy to really serious and grim without a lot of like subtlety or sense of flow. And I do kind of wonder if part of the problem here was giving James Gunn the Superman project, because if anybody is familiar with James Gunn, or just to catch you up a bit, he would have directed the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy for Marvel. He also did The Suicide Squad. Now, that's not Suicide Squad, it's The Suicide Squad, which was out kind of a few years later with Idris Elba and stuff. And they're both quite like fun movies, you know, they're kind of more offbeat, like quirkier, like comic book characters. Yeah. And as a result, you can afford to inject like quite a lot of humor into them. Whereas Superman obviously is a much more kind of mainstream character. He's more popular. There are certain expectations that you would have with Superman that you wouldn't necessarily have with kind of the comic book characters who you were unfamiliar with. And as a result, as I was watching it, I just felt like this doesn't even really feel like a Superman movie. It just feels constantly off the mark or something.
Okay. But did the character of Superman come across as Superman? It was just everything around him. It's kind of quirky.
The way they kind of portray Superman in this movie, and I don't necessarily fault the characterization, he's a slightly more flawed and conflicted Superman. And I don't want to get into kind of, you know, plot spoilers or anything, but it kind of ties into, I suppose, the politics that are behind this movie and kind of maybe some of the contemporary like commentary there and everything. But I just found that David Cornsweet, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He plays Clark Kent and Superman in this movie. And I mean, this has been a role that's played by the likes of Henry Cavill. In fairness, like, some people will have their criticisms of it, but a lot of people would, you know, praise his portrayal of the role. And I thought he did like a good job for that particular, you know, for that particular era of DC movies. I even thought like Brandon Routh, in fairness, as, you know, Superman and Superman Returns, is quite good. For me, like Christopher Reeve, like, no one has topped him.
Yeah.
But all of them kind of brought something a bit different and new to the table. Whereas this new Superman, there was nothing kind of interesting, to be honest. Dear. Nothing new kind of brought to the table, even though he certainly looks the part. He looks great. And his there's been a lot of talk about his chemistry with Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Lois Lane. And she is absolutely fabulous. Like, she could play Lois Lane in her sleep. She's just so good. The chemistry between them is great. But yeah, even like that storyline of kind of their, you know, romantic relationship isn't quite as neatly integrated into the movie as I would have liked. So yeah, unfortunately, it's just a bit of a mess. I found the set pieces were quite unremarkable. There are too many characters and a lot of them are forgettable. I also thought the CGI in the movie, to be honest, is quite ugly looking. Like, I would compare it to kind of Minecraft, to be honest. And Minecraft had really ugly CGI in it. It just doesn't look good. There's nothing kind of aesthetically pleasing about it.
Okay. You know? No, I mean, I don't think this is a spoiler. We've seen from trailers and things. Yeah. The scenes where people are throwing things at Superman.
Yeah. And people were kind of criticizing those early trailers for the CGI in it. But I kind of wanted to give it every chance going into it, particularly when oftentimes when you see those trailers, they haven't necessarily gone through all of the stages of the CGI yet. And sometimes there is a little bit of refining that'll happen between the release of the trailer and the release of the movie. But yeah, I didn't find it a particularly attractive movie to look at. Yeah. And I was just zoning out. And it's only 2 hours, which isn't long for a superhero movie. And it felt a lot longer.
Oh, dear. Now, in terms of the story, what can you tell us? Is everybody hates Superman? Is that kind of the gist of it for some reason?
Yeah, Superman has gotten involved in kind of some international conflict that he probably shouldn't have really gotten involved with. And some people are saying like he should butt out of this and some people aren't. And then in terms of like kind of social media and public image, again, there's kind of a lot of conflict there in terms of some people love the stuff that Superman is doing and other people are like, you know, get out of our country, you're an alien, blah, 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 and that kind of thing. And then you've got, like I said, the whole, like, obviously there's the romance with Lois Lane there, and there's the core conflict that is with Lex Luthor, who is played in this film by Nicholas Holt, who I thought was quite good in it, actually. I think he might have actually auditioned originally for Superman, which I thought could have been an interesting...
Yeah.
You know,
somebody texts in to say, I think I've seen this comment before, that it has a subliminal pro-Palestine message.
Something like that, yeah.
You can see it that way, because apparently Fox News are going mad saying it's woke and this is woke.
Yeah, I mean, like...
This is wokey man.
To be honest, like, you'd watch a lot of superhero movies that are kind of released in their era and you could say, oh, it's a commentary on this that's happening in the world right now, or that's happening in the world. So I wouldn't kind of get, you know, all caught up in it or anything, you know?
It doesn't sound like, though, even, you know, you can say, well, the story's not great, but go and see it on a big screen. But even that doesn't sound like it'd be much fun with this film.
Not really. I mean, the main audience I thought, like, watching this movie was, I was like, well, like, maybe like young boys might like it, you know, the kind of like comic book superhero-y fans, you know. But I mean, it's just, it just didn't work for me, to be honest. And it was such a shame because I really did go in there with completely kind of, you know, completely open-mindedly, you know, because I am a Superman fan and a superhero genre fan generally. Yeah. So it was disappointing.
It was. And was that expected to be the big tentpole of the summer kind of thing?
I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen, you know?
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Especially in this weather as well. That's probably not going to do us any favours.
Yeah. I wouldn't be kind of going to it for like a date movie. Like, my mum was asking, should I see it? And I was like, no, you and dad wouldn't be into this, you know? So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, that's sweet. Your parents still going.
I know, that's so
movies.
Cute.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, and just like that, people are dying more than once.
Yeah.
Did I understand that right?
That's essentially it. So, of course, it's in the midst of that series of one just like that, the follow-up to Sex and the City. And a few continuity errors have been spotted by most people. So there's one character, one of the new genre realm of characters who've been introduced into the series, Lisa Todd Wexley. In season one, she mentioned that her father had passed away. Then in season two, he appears and goes to an anniversary party. And then in last week's episode, and this isn't a spoiler if you haven't seen it because it's kind of a very minor part of the episode, he's died again and there's a whole funeral scene. Now, people are trying to scramble for excuses. One of the excuses is, well, it was actually the stepfather who died in series one. So that would make sense to why he appeared in season two. But there's a lot of interesting, hot takes that are being made by a lot of people. Some people are saying they should just kill LTW's father in every season and just ease into
make
it a thing instead. And then other people saying, well, hey, she could have gay dads.
Okay, there's that too.
There's that too, but they have...
But people can clearly go back and check if she uses the word father or stepfather.
And there's so many clips going around.
Yeah.
I remember when my father died.
Yeah.
And then two seasons later, oh my God, he's died. It's one of the many plot holes in this season.
Oh, is it bad for plot holes?
It's bad. It's just, it's not the... I hate watch it at the moment. I'm in thing of, I can't wait to catch up with the girls, but I'm not actually a big fan of the girls anymore. It's that kind of hate watch. I'm just curious to see what's going on.
It's a weird thing because it seems to Because it seems to be doing reasonably well in terms of an audience, but I would kind of wonder what proportion of that audience are loyal to the original and they just can't bring themselves to go, oh my God, because it's like betrayal if
and
you
I
reach
think,
that point. We
I think by not calling it Sex and the City and making it and Just Like That instead has given, I guess, the license for them to be able to say, it's not as good as the original, it's different, and stop thinking about it as the original, have it as a standalone.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's been three seasons where we've kind of all gone, bit disappointing, but we still watch it in our droves because it's the girls going around New York.
Have the producers explained these
not,
resurrections and deaths?
Not yet. Now, I always recommend to people, there's the Writers' Room podcast about it that is a fascinating listen if you are a fan or a quote-unquote fan, hate fan of the whole program. And they kind of delve into it. I'm expecting next week, I think they record it as it's airing as opposed to as it's as it was written. So maybe they might respond to some of the comments in this week's episode. So, do you know what I mean? So we'll figure this one out.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they explain themselves. The Superman backlash has started already. One texter says, your reviewers are overly negative, as usual.
I actually think I'm very positive, usually.
You are. You're a very positive person.
Thank you, Sean.
You need to stop reviewing superhero movies. You clearly don't like them and don't really share the same taste as those who are into them. Okay, but, you know, you can have good Superman movies and bad ones. It seems like you're not quite able to take the truth. You can't handle the truth. to quote Jack Nicholson, when it comes to a particular film. And you heard, you know, Oscar-winning Neil Jordan at the start of this show, perhaps bemoaning the fact that the studios just tend to, you know, churn out the same movies over and over again, because there is a constituency of people who one could say are perhaps a little unthinking about this kind of thing and will still unthinkingly hand over their cash. We're trying to save you money. That's what we're trying to do. We're doing it for your own good. Superman, says another texter, is a boring person, always trying to maintain order. He's like a crack vacuum, sucking all the crack out of every situation.
I thought something.
If he would just stop sucking crack and relax a bit, he'd be more interesting. I would imagine if he sucked enough crack, he'd be extremely relaxed. Jer says, how do people still go to see superhero movies? It's the same dross over and over. Did anyone go see a proper film like the 4K restoration of Ran? Yes, I'm a pretentious snob. You certainly are, Jer. You keep you being you. Let's have our second beer, Dean.
Follow that.
Yeah.
And I recover.
Okay. So we are on to our second beer, which is Le Trappenillus. This is the world's first alcohol-free Trappist beer. And I would say it's the world's only alcohol-free Trappist beer, except for Le Trapp have just launched a second alcohol-free beer called Epos that's coming onto the market in a short while in Ireland. But this is the first one they've done. Now, we were talking about on the Cairn Ishiban, sources of flavour and the Ishiban Shibori process and how that contributes to flavour. With this beer, what you've got is a lot of flavour coming from a range of different malts. So there's a term that people who talk about flavour talk about sometimes called the Maillard reaction. And it's a browning effect that happens in cooking processes. So you have meat or baking or something like that and something browns. And during that process, reactions happen that develop substances in the food that's being cooked. And those substances, humans tend to be particularly sensitive to them, which makes sense from a genetic point of view, because if you cook food, you make it safer. And if the smells of the cooked food are appealing, you're more likely to eat the food. So just genetically, we're more likely to be tuned into Maillard flavours. Now, for this beer, basically, if you think of Maillard flavours in terms of beer, it is kind of all of the flavours of the bakery shop. So everything ranging from wheat crust to biscuits to cookie flavours to burnt sugar, caramel, toffee, chocolate, roast, coffee flavours, the whole kind of gambit. And you've got quite a range of these in this. So this in Germany, there's a class of beers called malt beverage. Most of them would be similar in colour to this. They are non-alcoholic products, so they have no alcohol in them. And this would fit into that category. So this flavour is in it. Treacle bread, caramel, burnt sugar. There's a little bit of roast character. There's some chocolate in there. There is an amount of bitterness in it, but that doesn't come through as bitterness.
Yeah.
It balances out the sweetness of all of the other things that I'm talking about. What I found with this absolutely delicious drink, as just as a drink, I was tasting it this morning and doing out notes. And what I found was, as I was doing out the notes, that I was just drinking it as a drink. Yeah. As opposed to thinking of it as a beer. For that, then, it wasn't a question of having a beer without alcohol in it. It was a drink with flavours in it.
Yeah.
And really,
it's still though that it's, if you were blindfold and if you had, yeah, La Trappe or a Belgian beer made by monks at any point, you'd know where it came from, kind of thing. And they've still maintained that in it.
And it has the Belgian yeast character, because Belgian yeasts, the yeast strains that they use are many, diverse and unusual. They develop a lot of flavours in the beer as well. With a lot of Belgian yeast fermentations, you get a lot of spicy flavours, a lot of unusual flavours. For this one, licorice is one of the ones that's coming through, which is particularly sweet flavour. Sometimes you can get nutmeg and, you know, cinnamon, things like that. A little bit toned back down in this, but yeah, definitely the Belgian yeast character in it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, Russell, explain this. How does lasagna be classified as Oasis merchandise?
This is gas. So everyone is trying to get in on a piece of the pie, whether it's a lasagna or otherwise of Oasis. And Aldi has renamed itself Alda in Manchester. Scotland has a university teaching classes about it. And as the stores in Manchester have created a giant lasagna in tribute to Oasis, who are playing there this weekend. It's paying homage to their song Egg Digsby's Dinner, which name checks lasagna several times in it.
Right, okay.
And so a particular Asda store in Manchester has created a 1 kilogram, using 1 kilogram of lasagna sheets, 900 grams of mature cheddar. This is a 2 foot wide culinary creation which they are serving at their store for this weekend only. So if you really would like to go to Oasis and have a lasagna with bonus strawberries and cream, head on over to Manchester. Check out Asda.
Okay, you've got to admire their entrepreneurial spirit for doing this. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Hot Milk. Here's a clip.
Isn't she lovely? Do you think you'll ever marry Fia? There is a reason why the man is called the groom. It's an ominous title.
Siempre con la misma puta historia.
Is that yours? Yes, you. Does that handbag belong to you?
Rose.
He is unbearable even at a distance.
There you go, Fiona Shaw, using her own accent in Hot Milk, which is nice to hear. Right, okay, so the hot part of it, you said, the temperature is very warm.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, you know, it's kind of a metaphor because tensions are rising, and everything's getting very hot and simmering. Story-wise, we follow primarily Sophia, who is played by Emma Mackey, and kind of two core relationships in this movie. So first off, that relationship with her mother, Rose, played by Fiona Shaw, who you heard in the clip there. They have travelled to the Spanish seaside town of Almeria to see this kind of shamanic doctor who is apparently going to help cure Rose's mystery illness. So her mother is actually wheelchair bound, but they don't know why. He basically thinks that there might be some kind of psychological cause to this. So he's kind of trying to delve into Rose's past, even though she's very hesitant about this. And then at the same time, Sophia has kind of developed a relationship with this traveller who she's met in this seaside town named Ingrid, played by Vicky Creeps, who people will probably mostly recognise from the film Phantom Thread. It's an interesting kind of one. I like that it's a tight 90 minutes. The three lead actresses are absolutely fantastic. Fiona Shaw has been getting a lot of praise for her performance here as Rose, and she is brilliant. She's kind of a busybody and she's nitpicky. She's very mammy.
Yeah. Okay.
So it works like really, really well. But she's never overly sinister. But at the same time, you can totally see how if you had to live with this woman for years and years and years and like care for her and just be there at her, like every beck and call, that she would drive you absolutely up the wall. So you really do feel for Sophia here, played by Emma Mackey, who is brilliant. Again, like we would have seen her in the likes of like Sex Education, Emily, Death on the Nile, even Barbie over the years. And she's really impressive here again. She kind of plays a quieter, more observant and like quietly a rebellious character here. So yeah, it's just a well-acted movie. Like I said, there are cracks kind of starting to show. There's some nice kind of cinematography in it. It looks great. And the ending is absolutely bonkers and definitely a conversation starter for after you go see this in the film. You'll be talking about it
okay.
afterwards.
All right. That's a good sell there. Right. Now, this is one of those stories that certain people go, oh my God, I worship him. And other people will be indifferent to. Larry David's returning to do what exactly?
Yes, yeah, so the week after Barack Obama has announced a gig, I guess, in Dublin, he's teaming up with Barack Michelle Obama for a new show at HBO, which is documenting American historical icons that you may have never heard of over the years. So next year, America will be celebrating 250 years of existence, and Larry David has teamed up with a production company that the Obamas run to create a show celebrating, in a very comedic way, of course, a lot of these wacky people who have made American history but maybe don't make the headlines. It's probably like Hamilton, except people who are very far down on the list.
Yeah. I like the sound of that. It's very Larry David-ish.
It very much is. Yeah. I think it's very in keeping with him, and I think it's probably going to be a nice follow-up from Curb Your Enthusiasm that's going to be enough just to keep people happy,
yeah.
I reckon.
Okay, that's our lot for today. Thanks to Russell and Dean and Deirdre.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.